The Red Sox are playoff bound for the second straight year after winning the American League East in back-to-back years for the first time in club history. We're joined by the architect of that success. We're at Fenway Park. It's Tuesday, October 3rd, 2017. I'm Chris Gasper, and this is Season Ticket. Welcome to Season Ticket from the Boston Globe Sports Department and WBUR, Boston's NPR news station. Fenway Park is a labyrinth landmark. Many of you probably assume you know every inch of this ballpark, but I can almost guarantee you don't know the area of Fenway Park that we are in today. We're in the Red Sox family room. There are pictures of Red Sox players and their families on the wall. It's a nice and cozy little room right by the Red Sox clubhouse. And we're pleased to be joined by Red Sox President of Baseball Operations, Dave Dombrowski.
Well, thanks for having me. It's my pleasure.
First, want to congratulate you on another American League East championship. How much fun was that clincher on Saturday?
Well, it was a lot of fun. I mean, we're in it all year long to try to accomplish that. That's one of the steps that you look to accomplish. First of all, making the postseason and then winning your division. And then there's other steps behind that. But you never want to take for granted winning a division. It's a lot of hard work and effort. And as it got down to the end there, it got a little closer than we would have liked, I think. But again, that's what makes it so satisfying, because it's not easy. We have the Yankees, a real good club behind us. It was a battle all week long, and a little different feeling this year compared to last year, because last year when we celebrated in New York, it was one where we got walked off. We kind of were in a position there that people didn't really know how to act. There's a little bit of awkwardness. This one was easy. We ended up winning the ballgame and getting a chance to celebrate, so it was fantastic.
So we're going to start off here. We need to solve a little mystery, all right? I think most baseball fans have heard of Shoeless Joe Jackson. I heard you were shoeless in the Red Sox clubhouse on Saturday during the celebration. So what happened?
Well, you know, it's funny. I just talked to a good friend of mine, Jim Leland, just called me. He says, geez, what happened? He said, I saw you were in your socks. And I says, well, yeah, but I've been through a few of these things. Socks are easy to replace. Shoes aren't. For me, so what I did is as soon as I came in, I took off my sport coat and my good shirt and put those into the coach's room where there was no celebration taking place, took off my shoes and just left my socks on, figuring, okay, well, they're gone, but I can replace those very easily.
See, that's what you get with the architect of a team, always thinking ahead. So this was a strategic move on your part to not go in there with the shoes. I'm very impressed by that.
And nobody stole them. I mean, they were put aside, so I didn't think anybody would want to steal my shoes.
No one's going to take the boss's shoes,
I didn't think they'd want to steal those things.
I want to ask you, how do you look at the playoffs? You know, you've been in the playoffs a number of times. I think this is the eighth team you've had in the playoffs. You won a World Series with the Florida, now Miami Marlins, back in 1997. The sample size is small in the playoffs. Do you look at it like it's too random and sort of out of your control? Or as a general manager, president of baseball operations, do you look at it and say, okay, I built one team to get to the playoffs. Within that team, I hope I built a team that can win in the playoffs.
Well, I do agree that there's a lot more left to chance and fortune during the postseason, because anytime you're in a shorter time period where you're looking at a shorter sample size, anything can happen. For example, that's why you really want to avoid the one-game playoff if you can, because anything can happen with one game. A guy has a bad outing, a pop-up falls in, somebody twists their ankle, run into a base, and you don't have enough time to make up for those things. But I think you have to build your club to win your division. And if you win your division in Major League Baseball, you have a good team.
David Price will be used out of the bullpen in the postseason. He's been used out of the bullpen down the stretch here. He's made five appearances. How important was it for you guys to see him pitch back-to-back, as he did on Saturday in the clincher, and pitch three times in 4 days, throwing a total of 59 pitches in those three appearances? Because that seems to me to be the type of usage you're going to need in the playoffs.
Well, I think, first of all, very important to get David Price back, period. So if he couldn't pitch back-to-back days, if he could pitch every other day, I think that would have sufficed for us, although I'm sure it would have been tested at some time during the postseason. I think having him back and being in a position where he can be used like he is right now, which is a big force in our bullpen, and pitch back-to-back days if he needs to, and also pitch multiple innings if he needs to, is a very valuable person to have for us.
How receptive was he to pitching out of the bullpen when you guys asked him? And take me into that conversation, because I'm sure the whole time he was rehabbing, he was thinking, I'm coming back to be a starter.
Well, it's interesting because the reality is even ourselves, We didn't really talk much about which way we were going to use them until we got ready to make the decision, because the first focus for us was getting him healthy and make sure he was healthy. It was an easy decision for us, but of course wanted to bring David into it. And so we brought him into the office with a couple of us in there, and he was like, I'm happy to help however it can be. He says, I'm fine however you. So he was just open minded. I just want to help. I just want to be part of this ball club and show you that I can do that. And of course he has. So he was open minded to, I think, whatever role that we ended up outlining for him.
So we know you opened this playoff series against the Houston Astros, who you just played here at Fenway, on Thursday in Houston. The expectation is Chris Sale in game one and Drew Pomeranz in game two. Do you guys know beyond that who would be the game three starter?
We have an idea at this point, which I'm really not open to share, unfortunately, with you at this time. But it's a situation. We've got a pulse of it, but we'll want to sit down with the whole staff. I'm sure John will talk to some more people in the meantime. And not only talk about who's going to start for us, but who's going to be on the 25-man roster from a positional player perspective as well as the bullpen.
First, Dave, I just want to say, feel free to reveal anything here. This is a safe space.
Yeah, you're in a safe space, Dave. Just you and me, right?
Yeah, it's just us. We're just hanging out here. Eduardo Nunez, who you picked up a little bit before the trade deadline, really made an impact on the team. He hasn't been able to – he's played one game out of the last 19 because of that knee injury. Is he going to be able to contribute for you in this playoff series?
Well, I think he can. But as we're talking right now, when I'm done, I am going to go on the field and watch Eduardo Nunez take live batting practice. He is running out there now full blast with our training staff and with John out there to watch him. So our instincts are yes, but I want to see him come through today. And if he comes through today, then he will be able to be activated. He told me he felt great. He's felt better than at any point, even when he was active for that one game. And he felt like he was ready to go at that point and maybe watch a little bit. He thinks he's beyond that. But when you dial it up a little bit, you never know. So we'll see what happens today. But I'm hopeful and thinking that he will be able to be active for Thursday.
I thought you guys had an interesting season offensively. You ended up 10th in Major League Baseball in runs scored. But how you scored those runs is not the traditional way it's been done by a Red Sox team at Fenway Park. You were 27th in home runs. Were you surprised by the absence of power this team had? And going into the playoffs, do you feel you can win without that type of power that maybe has been here in the past, specifically with David Ortiz last year?
Well, I was surprised. I thought we'd hit more home runs. And I'm not a general manager that preaches you have to hit the home run. I think I like double hitting club more in respect, because I think that usually your hitting approach is better than you. You usually stay on the ball better. You use the whole field, and that usually leads to doubles. But I've also had a lot of big home run hitters, which you never turn down. It's great to have them a part of that team. I did think we could hit more home runs. Some guys just had down years from a home run perspective, but I don't think that is the key. The key is scoring runs. You do like to get that nice big three-run homer at times. It sort of takes the pressure off everybody. I think we have good enough hitters that we can hit good pitching. Hopefully we hit it at the right time and come up with the key clutch hits. I think that's as important or more important.
I want to talk a little bit about your manager, John Farrell. I don't think there's a more scrutinized job in New England than being Red Sox manager. I don't think there's another job in New England that everybody thinks they could do a better job than the person who's in the job. This is his third American League East title. He's the only Red Sox manager to win back-to-back division titles. Why do you think it is that he does not necessarily get the credit that I'm sure some in this organization feel he deserves?
Well, that's a great question. But I think really after – I've only been here – 2+ years, coming in here many, many times, of course, as a visitor. But until I got here and having been a general manager, this is my 30th year, I've never seen a manager's position more scrutinized than the Boston Red Sox manager's job. And now it's a second guest position in today's world, and with today's social media, all the much more, because anytime you have a decision that's made, there's so many different immediate responses. And the reality is that's what makes baseball and the manager spot interesting in many regards, because there is not always one right decision. The decisions can go, and I've said this before, that I've been fortunate enough to sit around a table at a discussion and sit with Tony La Russa, Jim Leland, Bobby Cox, Joe Torre, basically all Hall of Fame managers. And you could put the same situation to them and say, okay, eighth inning, 2-2 ball game. Nobody out, runner on first base. What are you doing? And one would say, I'm bunting. One would say, I'm hitting and running. One would say, I'm stealing. And one would say, I'm doing nothing. And these are the best managers in baseball. So it just shows you how many decisions you can make and the different thought processes. And every one of those guys would have a reason on why they were doing what they were doing. And it's interesting. I say, you know what the right decision is? The one that works.
It doesn't really matter what the media fans think of John Farrell. It's what you think of him. And you inherited John Farrell as the manager of this team when you took over. He has 1 year remaining on his contract. It's next year. Do you anticipate an extension for John Farrell?
Well, that's a great question, but one we haven't even talked about at this point, because what I have done throughout my time period is sort of focus on what you need to at a particular moment. And right now, that has not been a priority. John's set for next year. I don't have to worry about that. I'm sure in the wintertime, we'll sit down at some point and have some discussions about those type of things. We'll tackle that at the appropriate time.
All right, we'll be back with Red Sox President of Baseball Operations, Dave Dombrowski, right after this. All right, we're back here at Fenway Park with Red Sox President of Baseball Operations, Dave Dombrowski. When you look at the construction of your team here, it seems to me, at least, you have sort of a 3-year window. Craig Kimbrell can be a free agent after next year. Pomerantz can be a free agent after next year. David Price has an opt-out. And then the following season, you're looking at guys like Sale, Porcello, and Xander Bogaerts, who can be free agents after 2019. Does that increase the urgency at all of trying to win this postseason, the idea that you have a great core, but you're not sure how long you can keep those guys together?
Well, I think that when you get to the postseason, at least when you have a good club, I think there's always the urgency to win, because you don't know how many times that opportunity is going to come. I think we could beat anybody. Anybody could beat us. It just depends how you play at that particular time. So I don't think that you always go in with that sense of urgency. I don't feel a sense of urgency here, and there's a couple of reasons behind that. One is we have the wherewithal to keep some of those free agent players, so that's extremely important. And secondly, if we decide not to keep them because somebody else is going to give them more money or we don't think it's a wise decision, we also have the wherewithal to go get other players that are free agents.
When you look at the moves you've made this year, so many of them have worked out. I'm going to be honest with you. I was not a fan of the Pomerantz deal last year, but that's worked out quite well for you.
You're not the only one.
Yeah, I feel like I'm not, right? Yeah, you can take a victory lap on that one,
Dave. All right. There's some that work out and some that don't, so he's pitched great for us.
But I think one that has really worked out well and was a bold move was bringing up Rafael Devers as a 20-year-old and plugging him in at third base. He's been really good for you guys in this season. 10 home runs, OPS over 800 in about 58 games. What was it that you saw in Rafael that made you believe that as a 20-year-old he'd be able to help this team in the middle of a pennant race?
Well, another great question, and I think a lot was involved in that decision. First and foremost, he's a very talented individual. Secondly, great start at the AA level, and when he went through a little bit of a struggling period, he got out of it quickly. And, of course, we moved him to AAA for a very short time period, which the adjustment phase, he just tore up the league in a short time period. But I think in addition to that, the feedback from our coaching staff and scouts that went in there to watch him play were just as important or more important, because the one thing you don't want to do with a youngster like that is expose him to the big leagues, go through some struggles, which you know they are. But again, you never know until the guy comes up here, and that's where the talent takes over, and you have to tip your cap to him because he's a very, very talented individual.
Yeah, you probably don't know, you know, he's going to turn around 100-mile-an-hour fastball from Aroldis Chapman in Yankee Stadium.
No, I don't know that I expect that on anybody, yeah, really, because yeah. I'm still, as many games as I've watched, I still can't believe they can hit that type of pitch. It's a hard thing to imagine.
You know, it absolutely is. And so he's giving you a boost there, and that was, let's be frank, I mean, that was a spot that was a tough one for you guys. Pablo didn't work out. There were not a lot of options there, and that one worked out. Another move that's worked out, obviously, is Mitch Moreland at first base. He's given you very good defense, 20 home run power, only on a 1-year deal. Do you anticipate Mitch being here beyond this season?
Well, we haven't really approached next year with any of our players yet. Mitch has done a tremendous job for us. And really in the beginning of the year when we signed him, we said if Mitch Moreland comes in, plays gold glove first base, hits 250 to 260, hits 20 home runs, knocks in 75 runs, that would be a tremendous year. And Mitch has done that. And he is a gamer. He is a winner.
And that's a position where I would look at it, Dave, and I don't know how you guys feel organizationally. I'm not sure there's a natural successor to him already in the organization.
Well, we like Sam Travis a lot, and we continue to like Sam Travis. We're also going to play Michael Chavis, who had a real big year, some at first base, starting in the Arizona Fall League. I don't think he's ready to play here, though. So between Travis and Chavis, we think we have the potential there. But I can't tell you that either one of them right now is in our thought process to say, okay, that's the guy for next year for sure to plug in. I just think that that's probably an open-minded position for us on how we handle that.
Break down this matchup with the Astros for me. What do you see from the Astros? How do you see your team matching up?
Well, they got a very good club, very good offensive team. A lot of good young talent. They score runs. A lot like our club to me last year from an offensive perspective in a sense. I think they'll be around for years to come because they have a lot of young people. I think they made a good acquisition in Justin Verlander.
You know him quite well.
Yeah, and I was kind of sad when they picked him up the day on the trading, that August 31st, because when I remember when I left Yankee Stadium, it was about 20-12 after our game, and there was no trade, and I thought, oh, okay, so Houston is as Houston is going to be. And then I got back to the hotel, put on the television, the MLB Network, and they said, and there's a trade that had been announced. I thought, oh, that's son of a gun, because I know he's a good pitcher. I know that we're going in as the underdog around Major League Baseball. Frankly, I don't think that means anything, because last year, as I tried to remind people today, that I remember reading a bunch of writers they had last year listed in a national publication, and I remember 49 out of the 50 picked us to beat the Cleveland Indians at that time.
One of the hard things about playing in Boston, being a general manager in Boston, there's a lot of noise, and you guys have had a lot of noise this year. Where does the situation stand with David Price and Dennis Eckersley? Has anybody in uniform apologized to Eck? And do you guys have any regrets about the way that situation was handled?
Well, I kind of look at that. That's kind of old news at this point. That happened the beginning of July. So that's 3 months ago at this point. And I know people keep talking about it, which is fine. I think we handled it internally how we needed to handle it, which we do a lot of those things behind closed doors. And people just never even really know what's being done at a particular time.
One of the reasons I asked that question is you'd think David Price going in as a reliever, being converted from a starter, there'd be nobody better to ask than Hall of Famer Dennis Eckersley. Are they in a position where David Price can go to Dennis Eckersley and ask for a little advice?
Well, you'd have to ask those two, but I don't think that they're really, from what I know, that they're talking a lot, so I wouldn't think that'd be where they'd go. But I think they would get advice from other places. And I've read, and again, I know Dennis, and I've read his comments, and he's turned the page and moved on. And, hey, we all have spats in life and our disagreements in life, and you move on from there. I'm not saying that I agree with them. I've had them myself. You react emotionally at various times, but time has a way of helping wounds heal, and we're in a situation where you just have to move on at times.
As we get near the end here, I want to ask you this. What does Dave Dombrowski do in his downtime? What do you do for fun?
Well, I don't have a lot of downtime, but it's easy for me. I'm very close with my family. So, of course, married, my wife Carrie, and then we have two children. One is away at school. Our daughter is a sophomore at University of Oklahoma. Her name's Darby. And our son Landon is a senior in high school at St. Sebastian's here. So we spend a lot of family time together doing something as a family and having dinner, getting together with some friends, go to a movie along those lines. And then we spend our holidays with our various sides of the family. It's really not done during the season. The season is not a downtime. You may have a free evening when I'm from Chicago. So if we're there and my family's there, we'll go out and have dinner together and laugh and have fun. You need a break. My daily break is more I jog to keep me physically in shape, and then mentally it helps me. But as far as getting away and having fun, you need your releases, but you have much more opportunity to do that in the wintertime than you do during the season.
So we'll have to wait till the winter. You'll jump in a spin class with David Ortiz. And...
Well, I've been asked to do some spin classes, but I think I'll do my jogging because I don't think I can keep up with him.
How are you greeted when they see Dave Dombrowski, general manager, president of baseball operations for the Boston Red Sox?
Well, it depends if we won or lost the night before. Really, that's kind of a key ingredient in that regard.
Dave, thank you so much for the time and good luck in the playoffs.
Well, thanks. Thanks for having me. It's been fun.
And that's it for this edition of Season Ticket. If you like us, go to Apple Podcasts or Stitcher or wherever you get your podcasts. And be sure you tell your friends. For more great sports stories, subscribe to the Boston Globe. I'm Chris Gasper. We'll see you tomorrow.